day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Robert Herron.
Hey. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you as well.
Happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday. Happy talking TVs today.
Indeed.
Not that we can't talk about other things, but we're always happy to have you here for that exact thing.
The home theater love.
Home theater love. All right. Well, we've gotten to that time, so let's get right into the show. I will count myself in. In 3, 2, this 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including John Atwood, Pat, Mike Cortez, and our new patron, Brian. On this episode of DTNS, let's talk TVs with Robert Herron. Yes! Plus, Spotify's new audio plans, and update your mobile OS's stat. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, September 8th, 2023, from Studio Triscuit. I'm Sarah Lane.
From Columbus, Ohio, I'm Rob Dunwood.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And joining us today is Robert Herron, home theater and TV calibration expert. Hi, Robert. Good to have you back.
Hello. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I think it's kind of cool to call yourself a TV calibration expert, because not all of us can say that exact same thing.
Hey, I've been doing it a very long time, and the persistence and the education and the right equipment, it all pays off if you stick with it.
Well, we're so glad to have you on the show. We're going to be talking a lot more about TVs a little bit later, but first, let's start with the quick hits. Tesla and Hilton have partnered to install 20,000 Tesla Universal Wall connectors across 2,000 Hilton Hotel properties in the United States and Canada and Mexico starting in 2024. The deal expands a previous partnership between the two and will see chosen properties get at least 6 new chargers. Hilton's chief brand officer, Matt Schuler, says that the second most search attribute for its hotels is EV charging.
The IRS announced a new effort Friday to pursue 1,600 millionaires and 75 large business partnerships that owe hundreds of millions of dollars in past due taxes. IRS Commissioner Daniel Werfel said that new federal funding and AI tools will both help the agency target people who have cut corners on their taxes.
AI making you pay taxes if you're very rich. Interesting. In a likely effort to fend off AI models training on its data, the social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter, updated its terms of service to prohibit scraping and crawling of any kind without, quote, prior written consent, end quote. Twitter has also recently updated its robots.txt file to remove all crawler bots except Google. X's new terms go into effect on September 29th.
Google's next Chromecast remote might have more buttons. Android deep diver Michelle Rahman dug into the latest Android TV 14 beta release and found a system video showcasing the outline of what looks like a brand new remote designed to control Google TV software. The new remote resembles the current flat pill-shaped remote, but now the 6 main control buttons seem to have scattered to make room for what could be a new volume or channel rocker matching the diameter of the face buttons.
Huawei's launch of the apparently 5G-capable Mate 60 and Mate 60 Pro smartphones last week raised some questions about U.S. sanctions efficacy. Today, Huawei challenged that further by unveiling 2 more new devices, the Mate 60 Pro Plus and the Mate X5 Foldable. And gadget sources say that these are 5G devices, noting Chinese blogger Vincent Zhang's speed test on the Mate X5, which reached a download speed of over 1 gigabit per second, though without a 5G indicator. So probably 5G, but not saying 5G. Related, the U.S. Commerce Department has begun an official probe into what kind of chip exactly is in Huawei's latest smartphone line. And those are the quick hits. Now, the official launch of iOS 17 is expected along with new iPhones and who even knows what else at Apple's Wonderlust event that is due for Tuesday, September 12th. We will be covering it with the SnobOS team, Terrence Gaines and Nika Monford joining us as we do for Apple events. It's going to be a lot of fun. But ahead of that, Apple released iOS 16.6.1, which patches two zero-day exploits used to inject Pegasus spyware. Internet watchdog group Citizen Lab explained in a blog post last week that they found a zero-click vulnerability, which means a hacker's targets don't have to tap or click on anything to be affected. Basically, you just have to be affected. Adding, quote, "The exploit chain was capable of compromising iPhones running the latest version of iOS 16.6 without any interaction from the victim," end quote. All right, Rob, the big news from those who've been following this is that you should update your iOS device immediately if you haven't already. That's pretty clear. We hear this with exploits all the time. Is there anything unusual about this particular one that we can take away from?
Well, what makes this one particularly nasty is that you don't have to do anything. As you said, if you just get it, you've got it, and you're infected, and they can put this nasty Pegasus software on your on your device. So, as you said, you want to make sure that you are updating your device. Don't say I'm going to get the new iPhone. I can just hold out. You need to go ahead and run this update. Apple makes it really easy to do, and this is one of the times when you should absolutely, you know, exercise that ease and make sure you get this done.
You know, Robert Heron, we got another couple of Robs on this Friday. It used to be the case that a lot of Windows stuff, you know, you'd hear about things like this, but Apple stuff was somewhat exempt. We are in a different world.
Totally. They are the biggest phone manufacturer in the world, and they are a prime target for exploits like these. And it's especially important if you happen to be in a country that is actively targeting, say, journalists or other people who may not be towing the line in terms of how they represent the country or discussing things the country would rather not be discussed and things like that. And that's where I think these updates are the most important for any platform, be it Android or iOS. There are companies like this one that will actually pay top dollar for these zero-click exploits or zero-day exploits that currently have no protection to be had. And looking at companies like Apple, it's nice just to see that how far they extend their updates. I believe the 6S that I still use for testing, it just went off the latest update list. So if you have anything from approximately an iPhone 7 or later, you're still protected by these latest updates. And that's really nice to see. And it's something I'm seeing carrying over to other manufacturers like Samsung, Google themselves, and others on the Android side, providing longer term security updates for issues that really don't affect all of us. But it's still one of those things where, man, I don't even want the capability of somebody to be able to just send me a link or with no interaction on my part at all, take over my phone and turn it into a personal spy device, considering how personal these devices are.
Yeah, I mean, I happen to be running iOS 17 because, you know, I'm part of the beta program. So I was like, well, I'm not, you know, this doesn't apply to me specifically, but the next one could. And yeah, I think being vigilant about the stuff and not ignoring anything that pushes you to update something based on something that is a security update is not the worst idea in the world.
Well, you know what? Agree.
Let's talk a little bit about Spotify, because Spotify has been in the news lately for a variety of reasons. Most recently, as a podcast hub that may be shifting course after some exclusive series haven't panned out as planned. But it sounds like Spotify is doubling down on its non-music audio efforts, including a pilot to test free audiobook bundles for its paying subscribers in the coming months.
Yeah, so the Wall Street Journal sources say that Spotify is working with publishers in the U.S., which would let subscribers listen up to 20 hours of audiobooks per month. Spotify executives are reportedly looking to challenge something like Audible, which is sort of the audiobook offering that gets attention. Hard to really figure out what is an Audible, what is challenging Audible, although you have other options, some free options. For example, if you have a library that has free audiobooks as part of the library pass, you might be able to do that. But looks like Spotify is trying to figure out how it might challenge Audible. Some of the new offerings might be designed to appease Spotify users, though, grumbling about Spotify's price hike that happened in July. It was a dollar, now at $10.99 per month. Robert, are you a Spotify user or a audiobook user or both?
I am neither, actually. I do have some premium audio subscriptions to my Sonos device, actually, is my primary one. My main use for audiobooks, though, has always been for commute hours or trips where I'm in the vehicle for a long period of time or just simply traveling. It's just one of those things where I have the time to actually pay attention, and it can really make a trip go by quickly. And it's one of the most wonderful ways of, quote unquote, killing time, so to speak, when you're in a situation like that. So I fully understand Spotify's desire to transition some of their millions and hundreds of millions of users to being paid clients. And going up against someone like Audible is interesting, to say the least, considering Audible is like the first company I think of when I think of an audiobook experience. So
that's the only one that I think of, although there are others. But, that's the incumbent, right?
Yeah, there's definitely others out there, but I can't think of the names of any of them. I know I use something, as you said, Sarah, with my library subscription that allows me to get audiobooks, but Audible is the only one that I can think of. But I think one of the things that Spotify is doing here is that they have been on a run. They've been signing up users left and right lately. I mean, they really have been hitting their numbers as far as net new users. The problem is that they're not hitting their numbers as far as people who are paying for the service. So I believe right now Spotify has 551 million users. Only 220 million are paid subscriptions. So I think this is an effort to try to get some of those free users. Oh, I can get audiobooks instead of paying for Audible. Maybe I will just do that inside of a paid Spotify subscription since I'm already using Spotify. I think that may be one of the areas that they're going after here.
I like the idea of checking out your local library too. That was a good reminder, especially for maybe new parents out there. Let their kids check it out and see what they think.
100%. To be able to read free books and get free audiobooks, ebooks, all the things. I feel like nobody pays enough attention to your local library. However, talking about what Spotify is doing here, I think is really interesting. In fact, I polled a couple of friends that I know are Spotify users. I'm an Apple Music user, but I always say they're the same. They're roughly the same price. You get roughly the same libraries. Maybe there's an exclusive here or there. But the idea that Spotify has gone hard into podcasts with mixed results, depending on the podcast that you're listening to, but now wanting to be a place that you also think of as a spoken word type of, a place that you might want to pay for, such as an audiobook. I asked a couple of friends, how often do you listen to audiobooks? And many of them said, yeah, that's the only way I read. Not that I don't like reading, but I don't have time. But I can be in my car, maybe an Uber, maybe on a train, maybe on a plane. There is a lot going on here. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how Spotify retains audiobook listeners 6 months from now.
Yeah, the travelers is the sweet spot for this. A good buddy of mine, we know Rod Simmons from SMR Podcast and Barbecue and Tech. He travels internationally, two to three times per month. So he is an avid audiobook listener, and he probably goes through 3 dozen books a year or more easily.
That's crazy. I mean, that sounds crazy to me because, again, I'm like, who has time to sit down and read all those books? But again, if you got the downtime, especially if you're traveling, it's great to do. We would love to know more about if you listen to audiobooks and how. Friend of mine was like, I listen to audiobooks on 2X. And I was like, that's insane. Why? And he said, because I don't have time. I get through the book twice as fast. I thought, all right, cool. Everybody does things differently. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com is where to send your feedback if you have anything about this. But just to let you know, if you are not familiar with Know a Little More, this season is better than ever. Tom breaks down a pivotal moment in tech history in the latest episode called The Mother of All Demos. How many technologies we use today were introduced in the year of 1968. Many of us were not born at that time. Some of us might have been. But why did it take over a decade for some of those technologies to go mainstream after that year? All this season on Know a Little More, check out the Patreon page at patreon.com/knowalittlemore to know a little more. All right, Robert Herron, we're so glad to have you on the show today. You recently covered a lot of stuff that came out of the Custom Electronics Design and Installation Association, or CEDIA, CEDIA, which started yesterday, which means it's time to talk about trends that people can expect from the TV and home theater space. We had Patrick Norton on the show earlier this week to talk about soundbars and, you know, how that's all evolving. So what might we be seeing in upcoming TV designs that might make your home theater better?
In addition to CEDIA, there's one other show currently going on right now or about to finish up called IFA, and that is the other one where new TVs are being introduced, and it's likely things we're going to be seeing soon at CES come January in Las Vegas. One of the big trends, literally, for TVs right now is the fact that they're becoming supersized. I thought the 85-inch was a pretty big screen, and it is, but now there are several options for 98-inch or even larger screens out there at a variety of price points from familiar manufacturers that you may already know something about, including folks like Samsung, TCL, and Hisense. I am kind of shocked, really, about how many models are coming out at that particular size. And that might be something that's going to be important for folks who would like to go maybe projection, but don't have the rooms set up for that, where it can be dark enough to be compelling, whereas you could put up a 98-inch TV and get a pretty damn big screen experience with something that can do very good contrast, brightness, and color. And the price points, too. Some of these 98-inch screens for this year will likely start at about $6,000. And, of course, the more premium ones are going to go up into the solid five figures. But anyway, I think that is... I was taking a look at Best Buy. There is a 2022, I believe, version of a TCL 98-inch TV right now, part of their XL collection, that happens to be a mere $4,000 on sale right now. That kind of blows me away in terms of just the cost for the given screen size. A TV literally about the size of a queen-size bed. And like I said, too, if you've thought about projection and dealing with things like screens and room environments and the projector unit itself is just too much, having just a standalone large format TV is the way to go.
No, I know a lot of people say $4,000, that's still crazy. But for a 90-inch television, it
greater than
a year ago, if we were talking about this, it would have been $7,500, you know, if you're lucky.
Or more.
Why do you think the prices are coming down? And who is this for? Because I think most people say, not, you know, bigger the better, right? But most people simply don't have a room where they could get far enough back from something of this size.
You need a decent sized space for it. But if you could be back, say, at least 10 feet from the screen, it's not an unreasonable size to consider. Obviously, you could have a larger room than that even. One thing to keep in mind is that LCD technology as a display system, there is really not much left in terms of development going into it. It's more of a massaging of all the current features on a very incremental basis going forward from this point. Folks are focused, and these companies are focused more on what's next, and that will be things like OLED, and we'll talk about that in a second. But keep in mind that the people making these screens are trying to just capture as much of whatever the remaining market's going to be going forward with LCD technology. Now, if I'm looking for what I'm going to recommend to somebody out there right now, budget permitting, it will be an OLED-based display system, an organic light-emitting diode. The display system that's going to give you that infinite contrast ratio, perfect black levels, and just punchy color with historically great viewing angles, where you can sit pretty much anywhere in the room and still see a really nice picture. I still consider OLED to be king, and it can, at least on the high end, it's still kind of an expensive technology for some people. But budget permitting, there are TVs out there right now like the Samsung S95C that I would consider one of the top in its category and class. This uses the new Quantum Dot OLED technology, which in my opinion provides some of the most saturated looking color, just purity of color that you'll see. And this is their second generation of this technology. The panel itself made by Samsung Display and then sold through Samsung Electronics in the form of a TV. If you find the price points of that TV a little too much, you can go with their S90C, which knocks the brightness down a little bit, but it still features that color purity of the Quantum Dot OLED technology. Now, LG is not screwing around. This is their 10th anniversary of their OLED technology, and for that, they introduced one of the very finest displays they've ever crafted in the form of the G3 Evo OLED TV. This is using the Meta Lens Array technology that they've integrated, that was basically a lab thing a couple of years ago and is now being integrated. Millions of tiny lenses in the front of the TV to help capture light that would otherwise scatter incorrectly and redirect it forward for improved brightness. Literally about a 50% bump in overall luminance coming out of the front of that screen. And that technology also improves off-axis viewing as well, making it just one of the most compelling looking TVs as far as their premium flagship for the year.
One of the things that sorry to interrupt you, one of the things that people ask me the most, because I'm sometimes the most technical person in the room, you know, it's like, you know, what's all that proprietary OLED stuff, depending on what manufacturer you want to go with or price point or both? I feel like a lot of these companies are talking about the same thing, right?
For the panel, to me, there's only two manufacturers currently. It's either the Samsung display panel using the QD OLED technology, the Quantum Dot OLED technology. And technically speaking, that's just a blue OLED material that then has Quantum Dot color converters for red and green. It converts some of that blue light super efficiently into the red and the green for the red, blue, green that is used to generate all the colors we see. Now, in the case of Samsung or LG, they use a whitish material that then goes through a more standard traditional color filter. And it's really just two ways of doing it. There are pros and cons to each one. I would say one thing in common with both technologies, though, right now is that compared to years past, they are more robust than they've ever been in terms of just how long they're going to last, how less susceptible to things like burn-in they are. And in general, if you are looking at one of the new 2023 TVs, I could wholeheartedly recommend it. The one OLED everyone's still waiting for is Sony's version of the QD OLED technology. Using Samsung Display's panel, last year, the A95K from Sony took first place in the shootout for last year's home theater TVs. This year, everyone's waiting for the A95K, and it is still not out yet. You can pre-order it right now. It will be out on October 13th. And Sony, in terms of offering a factory calibration that's just superb, is one of those companies where it's probably the best massaged TV you could buy. You'll pay a premium for it, but the out-of-the-box experience can be fan-freaking-tastic.
Now, in the 4K, 8K category, before the show started, my mother, who loves you, Robert Heron, was like, ask him about something that's just, you know, the best 55-inch TV. I don't want anything bigger than that. I just want the best one of in that category. And, you know, could perhaps be, you know, get a sound bar, you know, figure out a little simple home theater stuff going on along with that. What do you tell people who ask you about things in that category?
If the word best creeps into it and the budget's there, I'll direct them towards Sony. Sony's version of that QD OLED technology is not only just well-built from the factory, it also has some very unique functionality built into it. It actually has a way of vibrating the screen, and the whole screen is actually an actuated speaker. And it is compelling to actually realize that sound is coming directly out of the picture itself. And that, to me, is pretty fantastic. They also integrate a camera system on top of the TV to not only determine room light levels and how far you are away from the TV, and it'll do automatic adjustments for both sound and picture quality in real time for that. And they've also incorporated some pretty robust privacy controls as well, so you're not freaking out about having a camera looking around the room while you're doing that. But again, that TV comes out next month, and that's the one most folks are just kind of waiting to see. And they will compare every other OLED out there to it. And that's the one I already have appointments. People are asking me about. They've already pre-ordered it, and I'm scheduled to go take a look at it as soon as it arrives. So I'll be doing that. But outside of OLED technology, if you're looking for a good value, it's going to be the LCD panels out there. That remains your best bang for the buck in terms of just, I need a big TV, I need something bright, robust, and at a variety of price points. You can always spend just as much on a good LCD as you can a good OLED as well. And companies like TCL, they have their QM8 4K TV. That is one that is, I would put up there with, you know, some of the best work I've seen out of companies like Samsung and Sony. I will say it is one of the brightest TVs you can currently buy as far as LCD technology goes. A few thousand nits of peak brightness, which this could be the... if you have a very bright room, this would be a TV that would compete very well with that. There are some quirks to its picture quality currently, and I love TCL as a company. I'm really hoping they put out at least one more good firmware update for this TV, and that's something I will be keeping an eye on. This is a Google-powered TV, so it has that built into it as well. Its direct competitor, I would say, would be the Hisense U8K. That is also, historically, a company that year in and year out is doing better and better work. The new U8K has arrived, and it is currently available, priced a little more competitively than the TCL I just mentioned, and the brightness might not hit the same peak levels, but it's still a dramatically bright, colorful, punchy TV.
You know, just in the interest of time, because we could go through this all day, and I love nothing more than to talk about televisions, because, you know, who doesn't like it? If anyone were to say, okay, so OLED is the best, but you're also talking about pretty great LCD TVs, what would be the one thing that you would say is the discerner between the two? You know, maybe, sure, you care about color quality, but, you know, is there one thing in a room that you potentially are going to put this new TV in that you really have to think about?
I think if you really like letterboxed movies with the black bars on the screen, it is really, and you sit in a light controlled environment, a fairly dark room environment, there is something kind of magical about OLED screens because of that ability to completely turn off a pixel. It makes for perfect contrast. Those black bars disappear. That image is literally just floating there. And if you move your head a little to the left or the right, or you're not sitting directly in the sweet spot, you still get very good picture quality. And that's where some LCDs struggle, especially the more value-oriented ones. Now, Samsung's premium 8K TV, they have a 900C currently. That is still one of my absolute favorite LCD televisions out there right now in terms of design. It has extra technologies for off-axis viewing, and it's overall a fantastic thing. But when it really just comes down to me being in the appropriate room and for taking in the image quality, or there are certain cases to be argued too for gamers as well in terms of pure pixel performance, in terms of how fast that pixel can switch, OLED is almost unbeatable. I can't think of another technology, definitely no LCD that can keep up with it. So that's, if you're going to say, why do I harp on and make the praises for OLED screens, that's why. There's a lot going on there. But for absolute brightness, it's hard to do it, or it's harder to do it with OLED. And that's where LCDs can really shine, literally and figuratively.
Yeah. So that's something to keep in mind if you have a room with lots of windows, for example, or you might not always be sitting in the same place in that same room.
And that also applies when you're looking at any TV. It's kind of nice to see them ahead of time, or at least read the reviews and see how they focus on things like ambient light glare reflection or anti-glare coatings. Samsung's one of the best companies, and they've been pioneering for a few years now the ability just to minimize any kind of reflection coming off the screen. You'll see that going forward with more and more manufacturers for this year and next year as well.
Well, Robert Herron, we are so glad to have you on the show. Many of us might be in the market for TVs, or we just want to hear about the newest and the greatest, and you are the man to do that. Let folks know, when you're not with us on this show, where they can keep up with your work.
You can always look me up at herronfidelity.com or robertherron.com. Either one, you'll find me there. And of course, I am trying to get back with Patrick Norton and get the podcast rolling again, but we're currently on the summer hiatus for the AVXL podcast. And otherwise, I imagine that'll be happening sooner than later. So,
well, we're so glad to have you today. Thank you so much for bringing the knowledge. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So, patrons, stick around for the extended show. Good day, Internet. We have another round of Who Am I? Can you guess the identity of the person before the final clue is given?
Oh, we love our Friday games. We're glad to have Robert Herron joining us for that. But just a reminder, we do the show live. You can catch it live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. And you can find out more or tell a friend, dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We hope you all have a wonderful weekend. We will be back on Monday with Justin Robert Young joining us. Talk to you then. This week's episodes of Daily Tech News Show were created by the following people. Host, producer, and writer Tom Merritt. Host, producer, and writer Sarah Lane. Executive producer and booker Roger Chang. Producer, writer, and co-host Rob Dunwood and Rich Stroffolino. Video producer and Twitch producer Joe Koontz. Technical producer Anthony Lemos. Spanish language host, writer, and producer Dan Campos. Science correspondent Dr. Nikki Ackermans, social media producer and moderator Zoe Detterding, our mods Beatmaster, W. Scottis One, BioCow, Cap Kipker, Steve Guadarmawa, Paul Reese, Matthew J. Stevens, aka Gadget Virtuoso, and JD Galloway. Mod and video hosting by Dan Christensen. Music and art provided by Martin Bell, Dan Luters, Mustafa A., Acast, and Len Peralta. Acast ad support from Tatiana Matias. Patreon support from Tom McNeil. Contributors for this week's shows include Patrick Norton, Scott Johnson, and Justin Robert Young. Guests on this week's show included Robert Herron. And thanks to all of our patrons who make the show possible.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
If you are watching us live today, type window, all lowercase, in the Twitch chat for a chance to win 20% discount code for the DTNS store. The code will be whispered to you on Twitch and is valid for 1 week. Once again, that code is window, W-I-N-D-O-W, all lowercase. Good show, everybody.
Good show. Robert, I was so glad to hear you say the S90 was a good TV, because that's what I just got.
Oh, yeah.
You buried the S90C. Lead there. I didn't know you just bought a new TV.
Well, S90. I didn't just get it. I've had it for a little bit of a minute, but okay. I'm just glad. I was going to ask questions about it, and before I had the opportunity to ask, you just told us all about it, said it wasn't your top choice. I think that was the 95, but the 90 was a good one, so.
Oh, for the money, that might be the best TV of the year. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, you know, I want to go OLED.
What it is about TVs.
But with the brightness, I just, you know, it's not that I don't have curtains, but the room is always, you know, either really brightly lit or super dark, and it always vacillates or switches between the two depending on which kid is in the room.
I don't have the brightest OLED in the world, but it'll still get up to it. I want to say, well, in HDR, it'll hit 700-800 nits. That's, unless you're dealing with direct sunlight on the screen, that's still pretty compelling. Okay, the one thing I didn't mention about OLEDs, at least with LGs in particular, is that in SDR, when you're watching regular TV, that's where the brightness might not be as high. You'd have to put it in some special mode to get it as bright as it would be like for HDR. But I don't find it that bad, even in a bright lit environment. The G3 is in a whole different category. That G3 in sizes below 83 inches, or that basically it's just the 55, 65, and 77, those have that meta lens array technology in it that jack the brightness up to a whole new level. And that's in its own little world.
I am still somewhat flummoxed by the fact that I grew up watching a 19-inch black and white TV. And 19-inch is being generous, because on a CRT, the screen is curved. So it's actually more like 17-something plus inches. But that we were fine with that. And now it's like, oh, if my 46-inch TV...
I mean, that would have sounded like really tiny. Big when I was a kid. We had a color television, but like the black and white TV went to my parents' room when we got like the cool color television.
But and if you're paying for, say, like Netflix streaming, and you're doing it in 4K with HDR or Dolby Vision, that's where you would want a newer TV that has the wider color palette that's available with these new TVs that are either quantum dot lit LCDs, or in the case of LG's OLEDs and Samsung's OLEDs, they both cover that color palette they're currently using, that wider DCI color palette. They're covering it almost to 100%. And that's what you want. That gives you more realistic colors on the screen. You combine that with the brightness highlights of an HDR signal, and it's eye candy at its best. That's where you really show it off. If you're watching just regular streaming content with, you know, not a lot of HDR and things like that, that's where it's like not as important. But
well, part of it is like 65% of my viewing is YouTube at this point, because
me too,
kids and wife.
Kids and but before content.
I know. Before we go any further, let's kick off this Friday's show, game show. Robert, for your let me explain a little bit. Who Am I is our guessing game show, where I describe the traits and characteristics about a famous historical or important somebody for the participants, that's being you, Sarah, and Rob Dunwood, to guess correctly their identity. The Twitch chat plays along. You don't have to raise your hand or anything. You can just kind of say like, oh, it's this person. In this case, okay. I've created
there's no
clueless...
who is type thing.
There's well, yeah, you don't. It's not Jeopardy.
We don't have to pretend we're playing Jeopardy. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Gotcha.
and then I've created, so there's three lists of three different people. We'll go through them, and the clues will get progressively more descriptive of the individual. So, you know, by the end, you should pretty much have it figured out. So let me start with the first clue for the first person. Is everyone ready?
Let's go. Let's do it.
All right. Clue number one, I was born in Nashville, Tennessee in December of 1952. I studied at the New England Conservatory in Boston, and I received a Bachelor of Music with honors in 1975 and a Master of Music with honors in 1977.
Well, it's not Elvis. Okay, keep going. I don't know. Anybody?
Any ideas? Nope.
I think Dolly Parton is older than 71.
She is much older than 71.
Yeah, so was,
she was 71 10 years ago.
Yeah.
All right. I was
Love
a soprano,
you,
and I was a soprano, and I'm using I as if I were the person. I was a soprano, and I've sung across Europe and the U.S. in opera and music theater, including singing principal roles with the Seattle Opera and Tacoma Operas.
Oh. Yeah, operas. Is it somebody that was like part of the grunge movement from Seattle?
This would be somebody about 70?
Yeah. Well,
born in 52, so they should be 70 or 71.
Yeah. Math. Yeah. 70, 71. Yeah, no, it would be somebody older.
I've got no one.
I got nobody. Yeah. We need more all right. clues, Roger.
All right. I met my husband in Arnhem, Holland on a European tour of the Broadway show Showboat, where I portrayed Magnolia. When we moved to Seattle, we were so hard up for money, we worked packing fish eggs for bait at $6 an hour.
Keep going.
Yeah.
All right. Clue number four. Although I was trained in opera and worked stage acting and musicals, I'm best known for my work voice acting in video games.
Ooh. Ooh.
Oh. Opera singer that does voiceovers and video games.
Ooh.
I got nothing.
Yeah. That's tough.
I don't know. I would make game show music with my mouth, but I think they're all copyrighted at this point. And you know, some of them were written by who's the dad from Growing Pains? Alan Thicke. He wrote a lot of game show. He wrote some game show, but a lot of sitcom music. He did Quite Facts of Life and Different Strokes. If you ever hear really? Him, there's Alan a Thicke there's a there's the like a promo. Theme? There's a what? Promo track of Alan Thicke doing the Different Strokes song, and when you hear it, it's like, is that really Alan Thicke? And you start listening carefully, it's like, wait a minute, it really is Alan Thicke.
Yeah. Well, all okay. Right. So the answer Next. Isn't Alan Thicke.
No,
so
it's not Alan
It's an Thicke. Opera singer who, okay, keep going.
Clue number five. I won an AIAS Interactive Achievement Award for Outstanding Achievement in Character Performance.
I don't know. Who's 70?
Is this like a really famous person?
Semi-famous. Famous if you're a gamer. I'll
Roger's
say that.
Good at he's if, he throws curveballs, but then if you you're, go. Oh, okay.
If you're like Kotaku is one of your must reads in the morning, along with Polygon and you know IGN mm-hmm, that mm-hmm, you would probably mm-hmm. know. All right, clue number six. This is probably going to give it away. My most iconic voice acting character required me to imitate dialogue read by a speech synthesizer.
Got nothing. You could probably tell me the person's name and I still wouldn't know.
We're smart people. We just don't know the answer.
You are encouraging me to watch more of the ending credits of the video games.
Clue number seven. My first video game voice acting gig I did for the video game for a video game happened in 2004 for the company Valve.
What games came out in 2004?
Yeah.
Half-Life?
Don't know.
No.
Close, Robert. Very close.
Alex?
Not that Similar. Close. But the
I
gotta quit looking at chat.
All right. Clue number eight. I am the voice of GLaDOS in the game Portal.
Yes.
I know that one. I don't know who it is, but I at least know. I know the voice in the game.
He knows the voice. All right. We're getting somewhere.
Can't tell you who it is.
Okay, I don't know.
I just went back and replayed that recently for the RTX update they put out.
Ellen McLean. She did the voice. So it's very interesting.
You know what,
because,
Ellen? I'm sorry. We did you dirty. We appreciate you very much.
What's interesting is she not only does the voice of the game, she also sings. She did like a song that she and her husband wrote for the game that wasn't put into the game, but it's featured on the soundtrack. And as part of a marriage proposal, she redid her voice in this like little video to kind of say like, you know, whatever, blah, 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 you know, has this special message for you, you know, and so will you marry me? She did that. She did the voice in Portal 2. No. All right.
Ellen. Both of those, though, are super important.
I just looked up Ellen McLean, McLain. I mean, she's very well known. Ellen, I am sorry. Ms. McLean, I should say.
I feel bad.
Because we don't know each other. Right. And you're awesome. All right, Roger, you stumped us across the board.
Well, it's part of it is an education, because it's fascinating to see the turn
of
someone who went into classical music, did basically Broadway shows on tour, and then was packing fish because they were broke, and then landed that gig. That, like, she was just bouncing from job to job, like voice teaching and like small commercial bits, and then she landed on that Valve game for first Half-Life, was it? Yeah, Half-Life 2, where she does the voice of like the overseer that you see when you're running around. And then she just, yeah, they said, like, we totally need her to do this robot voice we have in this game. And the idea was, like, she's supposed to be very dispassionate, so she needed to imitate she listened to a speech synthesizer say out the lines, and then she tried to copy that in a human voice. All right.
Love it.
Second person.
All right.
This might be easier because it's more of our age bracket. I was born in Pawtucket, Rhode Island in 1939 and began piano lessons at the age of six, starting off my lifelong love of music.
Roger always starts with these things where it's like,
that's the point. It starts off very broad and narrows in.
Right. Yeah. Piano player, 1936, Rhode Island. Got it.
1939. Yeah.
Got it.
It's a upside down six.
Well, I don't know the answer yet.
All right.
Person in their 80s.
Yeah. Clue. Are they still alive? I don't remember.
You know what?
Clue number two.
The octogenarians are very cool. Very cool. All right.
My dad's in his 80s. He's cool. All right. Clue number two. At 14, I won a Westinghouse Science Fair scholarship for building a personal computer.
I can't Google this.
Yeah.
Michael Dell.
Farnsworth? No.
close. In a way.
Okay.
All right. Clue number three. I graduated from Brown University with a dual major in music and physics and earned a master's degree in composition at Columbia University's Columbia Princeton Electronics Music Center. Okay. So there is a musical element to this individual.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't use Google.
Okay. Don't look at chat because people.
I know. No, I'm not.
Blocking chat out.
I'm playing.
It doesn't matter. They don't have
it
anyway.
Playing the right way. Roger, why?
Next clue.
All right. Yeah. All right. Next clue, number four. My debut album became the second classical album to be certified platinum.
Oh. Classical.
So a recording platinum. Artist, too. Okay.
I don't know if I can name a classical album.
Yeah, I mean, this is not my forte.
Mine neither.
John Williams.
Well, originally I kind of... thought that Len would be here, and Len is like pop culture like machine.
You said that last time. You know, like, what, Len was just supposed to like steamroll the rest of us? Come on, give us a chance.
Give us one about space. I'll steamroll that.
Well, that's good to know. I'll definitely incorporate that into the next match.
Okay, so it's not
all right,
John
clue
Williams.
Number five.
Okay,
clue number five. The album that album was performed on a Moog synthesizer that helped popularize its use in popular music. So that album featured classical music and a synthesizer.
No, we're not talking about Robert Moog again.
No.
Okay. Okay. Because that was an answer from a previous episode that I also didn't get. Who is 80? Who is 80 years old and a really cool music person? I can't look at chat. I can't look at Google. I don't know.
Next clue.
All right. Moog. I guess people are telling me it's pronounced Moog.
It is. I'm sorry.
Moog.
Yes, Moog.
Clue number six. When I lived in Greenwich Village, my loft's music studio was enclosed in a Faraday cage to shield it from white noise interference from all the radio and television signals. So this individual lived in Greenwich Village. Produced a recording artist on a synthesizer. This next clue will give it away, but I'll...
Okay, yeah.
I hope so.
Give it to me.
All right, clue number seven.
He said that last time. We still didn't get it. Okay, go.
I contributed to the score of two Stanley Kubrick movies, The Shining and Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. I don't know who did that.
Seen both movies. Have no clue who we're talking
Very
about.
Very scary. Yet. Clockwork Orange, one of my least favorite movies ever.
Final clue. I disclosed my transgendered status in a series of interviews with Arthur Bell held between 1978 and January 1979. It was published in the May 1979 issue of Playboy magazine.
I don't know the story. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll give you one other clue.
That probably would have been kind of a big deal of an article back in the day. But I don't know who it is.
I'll give you a clue number nine.
Okay.
This individual did the score to the original Tron movie.
I don't know who does that stuff.
Holy cow. I'm terrible at this.
Yeah, we're really bad at this. All right, Roger.
Wendy Carlos is the individual.
Ah.
Don't recognize the name either there.
No?
Yeah.
No.
She was really huge.
You expect a lot of us. We're very good at certain things, but this, no, we didn't get this one. All right.
Last person. And this does dovetail with space, Rob. So you should probably be cool with this
one. Okay. All right.
I was born
feeling good.
In 1930 in Sutherland, Virginia, to a family of sharecroppers.
Okay. All right.
I'll go into clue number two. I graduated in 1952. In 1952 with a Bachelor of Science degree in mathematics, but returned to do my Master's of Mathematics degree, which I received in 1955. So this person was born in 1930 in Virginia to a family of sharecroppers and did a science and then mathematics degree in 52 and 55.
I have an idea. I need one more clue, though.
All right.
Maybe two more.
Okay. In 1956, I was hired as a computer programmer at what is now the Naval Surface Warfare Center. I was the second black woman ever hired there and one of only four black employees.
One of these names I should know.
I know this one. Dr. Mae West.
No. It's close, but it is not Mae West. Did you say Mae West?
What's her first name?
I was like,
Gladys
West.
Yes.
Dr. Gladys Mae West.
You got it. Gladys West.
Yes.
Yeah, she was a hidden figure.
See?
So this is why I know this one. I wrote this back in January for a spotlight on the Tech Jot. And it's like, is that where you got this from? Because each reading is almost exactly what I have written in my spotlight.
I was doing the top five military technologies for Tomcats 5, and one of them was GPS, and I was researching GPS, and her name popped up. And the reason why is it's kind of her when she was doing a planetary, she was taking calculations of the shape of the Earth to get a more precise model of what the Earth looked like, because it's not perfectly round, right? It's sort of an ellipsoidal shape, and when you have the tidal forces of the moon, it kind of squeezes in the other direction. So she had to come up with a mathematical model to kind of define all that, and it's from that calculation she did that allowed us to figure out, or when they were developing GPS, to figure out the correct orbit of all the GPS satellites so you would have constant coverage as well as accurate timing for wherever the signals were reaching, so you you would have a pretty good idea, or the equipment would have a pretty precise location of where you were. In 2018, she was inducted in the United States Air Force Hall of Fame, and she was with one of the highest honors bestowed by the Air Force Space Command. And she was awarded the Prince Philip Medal by the UK's Royal Academy of Engineering in 2021, their highest individual honor. She is also considered to be one of the hidden figures, part of the team of women who did all the computing before digital computers. They used slide rules and large chalkboards that they would have to climb up ladders because all the calculations were so lengthy that they had to write.
She wasn't one of the four in the movie Hidden Figures.
Not in the movie.
But she was part of that group.
She's part of that group, and that movie is more of a composite. It's right. of the women that were involved. So it is thanks to her we have a GPS that works today. So when you complain about your phone not switching over fast enough to your map to find out where you got lost at,
don't complain to her.
No.
She's over it. She did her part.
So
yeah, yeah. I'm looking at the thing I wrote when she figured out the ellipsoid nature of Earth's orbit. She did that on a 7030, an IBM 7030. And it's just amazing how those old computers, they could do math, but you literally, everyone's iPhone is so freaking much more powerful than what that computer was today. Then, that thing was the size of a small room.
And people may not remember, but the display was a printer. It would print out the figures. You weren't looking at a screen. You were looking at reams of printer paper to see what your end results were. So yeah, nice. Well, that was my three people, and I'm working on the next three. Hopefully,
you know what, Roger? That was fun. I think we all learned a little something. Robert and I, we swing and a miss on that one, but yes, good reminder of the people who contributed to the modern life that we all now enjoy.
So now I know in my head, Rob, space, land, pop culture. And so
Sarah
music.
Eats lunch sometimes.
Well, no, those are the ones I can, I'm not being dismissive. I'm just saying I have to be careful because I have a land model in my head. I have a land model, and if I make it too easy, then he's just going to get on the second one, and then it just lands.
Well, you got to have at least one, though, that's somebody under 50. So, suggestion.
Yeah, these folks are all old enough to be...
They're old enough to be mine.
I love how Roger's like, okay, this one will be easier. I was born in 1930.
Fine.
You know what really gave it off, though?
On a farm in Virginia. We're like, oh, God. Here we go.
Although, to play this game with your parents. That
was
the thing.
She was a sharecropper, so I figured that would be a little...
Well, no. I mean, yeah. True. Depending on your age or just what you might have been studying in school, you might be like, I knew this right away. So... All right. Well,
the next set of people will be from the millennial on up bracket.
Just at least one.
Or just maybe just more.
One millennial. More and it won't be Ariana Grande. Wait, she's a millennial? Yeah, she's a millennial, right?
She was
born in the 90s.
You can go deep Gen X. Just give me somebody who can't remember 61.
Let's go deep Gen X. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Come on. Be cool, Roger. Well, listen, everybody, this has been quite a bit of fun. It has. Honestly, I did learn a lot, and I hope everybody did too. Robert Heron, thank you so much for joining us and playing along on this fun Friday of ours.
Awesome.
We hope to have you back soon. To everybody else, y'all have a real good day, Internet.
Although I do want to give a quick shout out to everyone in the Twitch chat, Norm Fizikas, Charlie in Columbus, Tom says go Chiefs, and Howard Yermish for resubscribing and supporting the show. Technomench, PC Smiley, Lion Gem Video, Zoe Brings Bacon, Moose 2271, and PC Smiley's again for cheering us on with bits. That is awesome. And thank you very much.
Yeah, over on the Patreon side, sorry, I was wrapping us up early. No raises. We know it's been kind of a slow week. Everybody's getting back from their summer vacays. Another shout out to Brian, our new patron. So happy to have you, Brian. And we hope you all have a really good weekend. And, you know, if you're already a patron and you know somebody who might want to directly support the show, let them know. Hope you have a great weekend. See you next week.
Have a good day and great weekend.
Oh, yeah.